Good morning, good people, and welcome to the Poolproof Wisdom Podcast, Conversations. To say that today's guest and I have history would be an understatement. I first met him when he was a member of a speakers bureau we created at Anheuser-Busch, where I worked at the time. I immediately recognized he is a gifted communicator, thoughtful human, and one hell of a presence. He could, I've always said, inspire a brick. That's how powerful his message and delivery are. Now, many years removed from who we were and the roles we played in each other's lives then, we have moved forward and found a way to remain true to our shared interest in making the world a better place. Today, Michael Chatman is the Chief Executive Officer of the Global Center for Generosity at the Cape Coral Community Foundation, located in Southwest Florida. This inspirational human now even more actively makes the world a better place, encouraging philanthropy as the leader of a global organization focused on fostering a healthy and dynamic community where individuals are inspired to support, strengthen, and enrich quality of life through generosity and civic engagement. The foundation offers a variety of inventive ways to give generously to a multitude of diverse partners, prioritize needs, and best serve its citizens locally, regionally, nationally, and of course, abroad. The organization partners with individuals, families, and corporations to facilitate and administer philanthropic efforts, connecting its supporters with critical needs in the community and beyond. As the Center for Generosity, the Foundation's goal is to shape public policy fairly for all community members, partner with nonprofit organizations to deliver resources in an efficient, strategic manner, and empower the community to support the common good. Because the world needs exactly this, there was no question when I settled on discussing the power of giving that Michael would be the person I wanted to speak to about it. And while I'm at it, I plan to explore his journey of transitioning from motivating young people to helping do that and more for many as a philanthropy executive focused on making the world a better place. What he's learned and what his faith journey has been like will also come into play. In this sharing, I know you'll find something that will inspire you to make your difference as well. As far as the credentials, Michael has received a Bachelor of Arts degree in Political Science from Missouri State University, a Master of Arts in Philanthropy from St. Mary's University of Minnesota, and Harvard Business School in Social Entrepreneurship. In addition, the nonprofit Times Magazine named Michael as one of the most influential philanthropic leaders in America. Good morning and welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
So, you know, it has been more years than I can count since you and I have spoken. However, we've always remained in each other's orbits. So I know what you're doing and you know what I'm doing and we're both still sane. So that's a good thing, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's always great to connect.
So I was thinking in terms of this episode, in a world where everybody seems to be clamoring for anything else but normalcy right now, because everybody keeps talking about a new normal. And I'm like, come on, child, ain't no new normal. It's just how are you going to adapt to the way things are today, right?
Yes.
And I thought about giving because it's so important to give, as opposed to worrying about what you can get, I think. And that topic has been on my mind for quite some time. And when I thought about who I wanted to talk about with that topic in mind, you, of course, were top of the list. But I want to delve a little bit before we go into that discussion, because you're like a cat. You've had so many lives in terms of the things that you've done, and you've done them all exceptionally well. And when we met, I hate the word motivational speaker, by the way. Mm-hmm. I think that you're an inspiring human being, and that's how I prefer to see you. But you were an inspiring human being who was part of a speakers bureau that we created at the company that I was working for at the time, Anheuser-Busch. And you were particularly focused on young people. And then you made a lot of different progressions throughout the list of things that you've done, where you somehow moved from that into this world that you exist in now. tell me a little bit about that journey from the time that you and I met to the progression to where you are now, and what influenced you to do so?
Well, you know, you're an influence on me. Oh. You know that. And you're modest as well. But I think age and maturity, I had an opportunity to grow with my audience, basically. So as I became older, the students in high school became college students. They eventually went on to become teachers and principals and leaders of corporations and executive directors of nonprofit organizations. And so over the years, I've made contact with many of them. And that led to a segue to do what I'm doing now. And you're right. I've always been an inspiring person. I've always taken my core message and I've tried to take that to every niche, every industry that I have sought to be a part of. And now working in the space of giving and philanthropy work, I have brought that same positioning in terms of this positive energy and inspiring work to the field that I'm in now.
My last episode was with Larry Gioia, and we were talking about happiness, which is important. And I think that what's compelling about your story is that this is not just work for you. This is a love.
And yes, it is.
It makes you happy. Talk to me about how that is derived from doing things that are benefiting others.
That's great. Yeah. I have a part of my life is an attitude of gratitude. It is something that is very central to me. So it's not about just generous giving. It's about generous living. And you and I have talked about this for years, where I've always sought to make generosity my lifestyle.
That's right.
And my grandmother taught me early on that giving is not something that you've got to do. It's something that you get to do. And so I see it as a joy and a privilege. And I think so much of my life and so much of how I view life comes from my love of giving, because I think it is rooted in this place of happiness and joy. So I do think we find a place of happiness and joy through our giving. It also is a place where we find a sense of connectedness to other people. So I see it even in my own life with all the different cities that I've moved to since I left my hometown, Miami, being in the space of philanthropy. And I've been a part of many different networks and many different groups, but the ones that I've shared a common place with and the ones that I've actually grown in the relationship, the connectiveness has always come through giving, through serving on a board together, maybe going out and doing some volunteer work. So there's a lot of benefits that could be derived from giving itself. And so that's why I do it, because it is something that keeps me sane, even in the midst of a pandemic. No matter what we are dealing with in our lives, I can always come back to this place of giving and find a sense of joy and a sense of happiness and a sense of purpose through doing this type of work.
When you're looking at the context of giving in and of itself, and you know, let me step back a little bit and say that that context is not as simple as it may seem. You know, it's not like you just get and you give. It requires a lot of work. You are an executive who is leading an organization that is compelled to find ways to obtain resources to help people. That doesn't happen overnight. Tell me about what that really involves. It's not just fundraising. It's not just program development. It's not just the dissemination of funds. How do you get to a point where that core sense of value that the organization represents is upheld through how you go about obtaining the resources, the volunteer efforts and whatnot to actually do the work necessary to provide support?
Yeah, I think what it's all about for me as I engage with people, it's about this sense of connecting passion to purpose. So everyone has a passion. Everyone has a field of interest, something that gives them a sense of inner joy. And so I try to tap into that. So for us, so much of what we do around our charitable giving always starts with the philanthropist. It starts with the humanitarian. It starts with the donor and trying to really unlock what it is that's going to give them their life and their sense of purpose and their sense of inner joy. And it's one of those things where I'm tapping into a place inside every individual where they realize money can't buy everything. And so philanthropy and charitable giving gives them the place to fill that void. And that's essentially the role that I'm seeking to play in that. And I have come to embrace the fact that people do it for different reasons, mm-hmm. and that's okay. Some people do it for social reasons, where they want to be on the cover of all of the social of all of the society magazines. Uh-huh. Some do it strictly for altruistic reasons. Some do it for, you know, deep impact, where they really want to see Charles, all the statistical analysis and the data, and take a deep dive into data to see the impact. And they just do it for different reasons. So I try to tap into that and then lead them towards that and guide them towards that. And at the end of the day, what they're really seeking is a greater sense of purpose in mm-hmm. their lives. That's mm-hmm. what they're seeking. Mm-hmm.
And when you look at all of the variety of needs that exist, now your organization in particular, you know, isn't just national. You have a global reach.
Global, sure.
How do you get your, I don't even know if this is the right way to ask the question. How do you get your mind around all of it? Because every moment there seems to be another emergent need. How do you do that?
Yeah. And you do come to a place. I think the way I resolve that within myself is we can't do everything, but we could do something. And so I draw from a Mother Teresa who didn't have a lot, but boy, did she have an impact. In fact, I'm reminded of a story prior to her passing, Charles, when she was interviewed, not on the podcast like we're doing now. She was interviewed by a reporter who asked her, and I think it was very profound. They asked her, they said, Mother Teresa, what do you derive your impact from? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've been around the world, you know, making a difference in people's lives, and your work with the poor is unprecedented. Mm-hmm. What is your philosophy? Mm-hmm. What is it? And she says, I really don't know. Mm-hmm. I really don't know. Mm-hmm. And so feeling a sense of frustration, the reporter leaned in again and said, there must be something. And she said, I really do love the people. Mm-hmm. And so it's the simplicity, it's spiritual. Mm-hmm. It's something that is deeply spiritual, and it is something that is deeply transformative about philanthropy and this space of work. And when you go back to the origins of those who gave birth to this movement, you know, they did it out of a place of generosity. So when you go back to your original question, when you think about the fact that we're a global foundation and we mm-hmm. think about the fact that there's so many different needs, I think at the heart of it is that we're trying to strike a match and start a fire around a movement of generosity is mm-hmm. what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. So you do what you can with what you have. Mm. And if everybody does that, then we can have a ripple effect. And so that's what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you're taking it in that context, it's not lost yeah. on me. And this may be the case where people who are listening may say, oh, my God, he's going to raise a racial question. But it is not lost on me, you know, as I look at, you know, philanthropic efforts and philanthropic organizations and leaders. You're atypical. You don't look like everybody else. Right.
Yes.
So
yeah.
What does that mean? That's not any type of knocking down of those other individuals who are leading organizations. It's just factual. However, because I think that we bring our influences to whatever it is that we do as someone leading this organization, which, by the way, having checked it out, it's a diverse organization of all kinds mm-hmm. of people. So that's yes. a wonderful thing. But what does that do in terms of influencing the sense of direction that you take and therefore that you encourage the organization to take in metering out what it does across all of the variety of needs that exist?
Yeah, I think for us, the culture of our organization from a donor level, from the philanthropists that we partner with, from our board of directors to our staff, everything again comes back from this place of generosity, and it comes from this place of servant leadership. Mm. And so it's the old Negro spiritual hymn that say, may the work I do speak for me. Mm. And so you're right. When you start looking at the fact that I'm not the atypical leader, mm-hmm. particularly a CEO in this space, which mm-hmm. is true, mm-hmm. The way I overcome that It's just through the work. So I focus on the work. I focus on the impact. I focus on the love. I focus on the place of generosity, the sense of joy. And that becomes a situation where the recipients or the benefactors of our work, they become our mouthpieces. You know, they become our voices. They become our brand ambassadors, if you will, to speak for how this work has been so transformative in their lives. And that creates more opportunities for more people to want to be involved in our movement. More. And there have been times, and I don't say this, I say this with the utmost humility, on this journey where there have been bigger opportunities for more opportunities, more financial opportunities, more bigger organizations, bigger budgets, but the heart of the organizations were not right for me. The culture wasn't right. You know, they say, Charles, not all money is good money.
Right. That's right.
So for me, I'm very centered from a core place of spirituality. I'm centered in a place of purpose, and I know who I am, and I know where I'm going. And so I tend to be on that type of path, and anything that is going to be a distraction of that is not something that I seek to pursue.
I got you. So that is a big part of how you operate, and I think that's important. Taking that understanding, that sense of spirituality, that connection to purposefulness to the masses is not something that just happens again by default. It's important to understand your audience. And my recollection of you, you are terrifically insightful. You don't necessarily speak that much. By comparison, you and I are like a bit like Laurel and Hardy because I'm always running my mouth. You're listening.
We should go on the road, Charles.
Yeah, could be interesting. But in that capacity, nonetheless, what I do know is that you're observant and that you are always clear on identifying what someone needs to receive whatever it is that you want them to receive. Is that fair?
Yes, it is.
So
it is.
With that being the case, when we're talking about philanthropy, a lot of folks believe that is something which is the purview of the rich. Only rich people can give money. Only rich people can make a difference. Only rich people can do this. What is your retort to that thinking, first? And then secondly, how do you get people to the point, no matter what they have, to embrace a similar philosophy as you do, which is spiritual nature, and based up on this idea that you do what you can with what you have? How do you do that from a foundation standpoint?
Yeah, and that's a great point. First, to your point, Charles, about philanthropy is for the rich. It's most certainly they have a lot of financial resources and financial blessings to do a lot with the resources that they have. But even with that, they still have proven over time that their efforts alone are not enough to resolve all of these big issues that we have. And so we have done just the opposite of that around this whole messaging around everyone can be a philanthropist. So grandma, granddad, those who have little or a lot can be a philanthropist. And so we have built a whole movement around volume, large masses of people giving in lots of ways through their volunteerism, through their dollars, but they tend to be in smaller amounts. And so we put together a lot of, one of the ways we deal with that is through our giving circles or our donor circles, almost like this idea of a group investment club. So we have a lot of people who put in the $100, the $200, the $500, and that those dollars collectively become a pot of gold that is significant enough to be able to have an impact around a certain field of interest or some charitable cause, a project that a person cares about. So that's one of the ways in how we deal with that as well. You know, one of the things that we do a lot with, and I know you have a passion for this, and I do too, because of our affinity to our grandmothers. We do a lot in the area with seniors, particularly in the area of social isolation. And so we have had a lot of success around with partnering with college students And, you know, having worked with young people for so long, working with high school students and college students, where we put together this massive phone bank of college students and high school students to reach out to the elderly and the sick and shut in, to call them, to check in on them. Do you need me to make a grocery store run or a Walmart run? Or what do you need me to do? Or just call and check in to make sure you're okay. Well, that doesn't take a lot of money or no money at all, but it is having a significant impact. So those are the types of things that we seek to do to get around this idea that you have to be wealthy or rich in order to make a difference in a person's life.
You know, that's huge, because listening to you speak about it, it actually puts a smile on my face, because I think the concept for many people is that giving always only is possible in cash. Right?
Yes.
But it's time, it's understanding, it's compassion, it's all of these human values and virtues that we perhaps sometimes take for granted. But programmatically, you're putting something in place that helps people to access those things where they otherwise wouldn't be able to. So the average reasonable person is still giving, but they don't necessarily recognize it in that light until it becomes clear what impact it's having. Is that what you're kind of saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay.
And then I would also say, too, there is a, and I know I'm talking to the master marketer and PR person here, but there are a lot of hidden benefits associated with giving, if I can look at it from a marketing standpoint as well. So this idea of I'm new to an area. So a lot of retirees come to our area, Charles, to retire from up north. They're sick of the winters. And I know you were, too. And yes, they want to come to someplace warm. But they're alone. They don't know a lot of people. And so giving becomes a place where they achieve this sense of connectiveness. And in this giving, they recognize I'm no longer alone. I have friends now. And so that's one of the beautiful things about this as well. So normally when I go to work with someone who's new to the area and they're feeling like I don't know anyone, I'm feeling a sense of isolation myself. And what we've heard throughout the course of our lives, you got to give your life away. You know, you got to be willing to give your life away in order to gain it. So through this perspective of giving, which is not always monetary, we see a lot of joy from that. And I say to people all the time, I love the sweet fragrance that comes from the joy of giving.
That's awesome. That's good. Yeah. That's good. So your currency is human capital. Fair?
Yes. Fair.
You know,
fair.
That's amazing. You know, because as someone who has, you know, done philanthropic work, supported philanthropic organizations as part of my job, supported and sponsored things. It didn't hit me till you just said it now that that was a possibility. It was all terrifically functionalized for me, I think.
Yes,
you know, you give this much and this is what it does. But it really, from what you're saying to me, wow, that's, you're really having a moment right now because it's starting to really ring for me. It's really about this understanding that what the funding does is only elevate human potential.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Wow. Wow. That's leave it to you to do that.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, what happens too, and that's why I was saying, I don't try to define what gives individuals a sense of purpose around their giving.
Right.
Because I realize those who have financial wherewithal where they can do some things, sometimes they want that to be an extension of their success. I'm already successful as a CEO, as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, and I want my giving to be an extension of that. Almost a sense of corporate social responsibility type, you know, work. But for me and our work here, we tend to work with those who are looking to make a pivot or a shift away from success and finding significance. And I'm looking for a sense of sense of significance and all those things that money cannot buy, you know, the joy, the peace. And I mean, how do you put a price tag on inner peace? I mean, how do you put a price on that? And joy and generosity. So we tend to attract a lot of the donors who want that in their life.
Michael, have you noticed a shift pre-pandemic to now in terms of how people are responding based up on what you've just described?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. I think people are shifting more towards, it's always there, but sometimes it takes something catastrophic, you know, something big or massive to uncover the things that we already know, and it forces us into action. So I think now with this whole pandemic, it's forcing people to focus on what really matters and coming back to this perspective that life is short and I want my life to count. And what is my legacy going to be? What is my legacy going to be? And how can I use my life in such a way where it has the most meaningful impact in a person's life?
Right.
And also to aid towards my legacy and what I want to be known for.
So as a person who obviously has to think about this in a strategic, you know, way, you know, you may remember the phrase, and I've always applied it, anticipatory planning. You know,
yes.
We recently celebrated the 20th anniversary of 9/11, right?
Right.
And we remember very well what happened in the weeks and probably a couple of months after then. Yeah. Everybody came together. It was like, oh my gosh, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. But it didn't last. So in a case like this, as a leader of an organization and all of the people who are, you know, leaders of that organization who are volunteers with it, how do you anticipate, to the extent you can, what you might be able to do to ensure that that moment that you're describing, where we're coming together, looking at life differently, all of that, that we make it last? Any suggestions for that?
I do have some suggestions for that. I think that you have to take a look of what do you want your life to stand for? You know, again, it goes back to this issue of legacy. The best way for me to explain this would be in a story, if I may take a few minutes to do this. So I had a person come to me of significant financial means, had amassed a lot of wealth and was looking to do something in the community, a person who had sold his business, moved from up north, came down to the south, and wanted to do something big. And as we sat down and we had a conversation, Charles, I said, what is the most important thing in your life right now? And he says, for as much money as I've made, I've never been about family. Mm-hmm. And I have all this money, but I don't have any connection or relationship with my kids. Mm-hmm. So I said, do you realize that philanthropy and charitable giving can be used as a catalyst or a vehicle to bring you closer to your family? So why don't we create a fund, a giving fund, and you bring your kids in around a collective issue that you care about, not just you, but what are your kids? And this will give them an opportunity to see you in a different light, and it will give you an opportunity to right some wrongs and also bring them closer together. I tell you, it's been one of the most meaningful parts of my work to see this father come together with his son and daughter around a collective giving cause and project, and just to see the joy and the laughter and the reconnection with them, and made up for a lot of lost time. So I think what this does, again, it brings us back to a place of what's central in our lives, what's most important in our lives, and how can we make this a habit in our lives so that when we get back to, if we ever get back to any sense of normalcy, at least we will know how to make the adjustments in the midst of these difficult and trying times.
And that would be an example on the more macro level for people, of course, who have the resources. But what you're saying, I think, as well, is if we take that same type of example, but we take it with the person who is going to work every day like everybody else, they're not rich, but they still don't have that connection with their family, maybe that translates into them doing something on a much smaller scale, you know, making sandwiches and taking them down to the local mission, this type of thing. So it's the context of how individuals are going to look at what their reach can be that has the implication here. Wow, that's awesome. And
you know, I would, you know, and as tough as what I'm about to say is challenging for people, I'm going to say it, because oftentimes when we think about philanthropy and giving, we always think outside of our family. But see, sometimes family begins right at home with our brothers and our cousins and our nieces and our nephews. And sometimes, though, there are issues that have kept us distanced from each other. People not talking, people not speaking, difficult situations. And I have seen in moments like this too, and I could even speak in my own family. I'll just use my own family in a situation like this where my mom and my sister hadn't spoken in a while. They had been at odds around some issues. And I challenged my mom to say, could this be a moment before you look to give elsewhere? Can you look inwardly into our family to see if that might be a need that you might be able to meet? And here's the challenge with this. It's going to challenge you from a courage standpoint, because it may not be met with any type of appreciation. And see, that's the challenge of being a giver as well, because sometimes the good that we do, Charles, is not always reciprocated. And that's where the spiritual component and element comes in, where you have to trust the universe and the process of know that there is a law of reciprocity that's working for your own good, even in the midst of our humanness. When that person shows no appreciation for it. And so my mom went screaming and kicking as she sought to do this good deed. But she felt good that she had done it, because there was some movement that literally that had not happened in years between her and my sister. There was some movement happening where it that one act of generosity reestablished some communication.
And that's family. But what you're saying to me so resonates with every, you know, my biggest challenge these days is to not be Thanos or Agent Smith in the Matrix and be tired of humans altogether. Right.
Because
for every one of you and so many other individuals I can name who are out here doing the good heavy lifting, there's so many other people. I'm just like, oh, you're just such a whiny complainer. You don't know how good you've got it. So those lessons, that approach that you said with your mom and your sister, if we humans could take and embrace that across the board, my gosh, what could we do? What could we do? Right. And that's the awesomeness of being able to talk about this context of giving being beyond the financial repercussions of it. Ramifications of it is that we have to think about what we're doing in the context of what its meaning is for others beyond ourselves, right?
I think it's almost a combination of the two. It's also in the case of my mom, and I know you said we can broaden the context. It did something for her too.
Right.
It didn't do anything just for my sister. It also did something for her too, because she was the one that was holding the grudge as well.
Right.
And so having that sense of movement actually did something for her as well.
But when you're going into it, even the case of your mom here, and this is where I'm looking for the detail, she didn't know that was going to be the case. So it wasn't an expectation.
And that's true. That's true. That's true.
The thing I think that is the linchpin for me is that when you are doing things selflessly,
you
end up in a position where, interestingly, you find that you are the one who is reaping a reward that you did not expect.
That is so true.
Because, yeah, I'm thinking, Michael, that, you know, the whole idea for me as I'm observing is we need to get back to a point where we realize, and I say this again because it's a cliche saying, but it's so applicable. We really are all in this, however you want to define this, together. And whatever we do, we are going to have to get out of it together. And sometimes that means doing the thing that is the thing that you don't want to do, to your point, without expecting anything from it. That was part of the conversation I had in the last episode. You're not getting anything from it, but dang it, you're going to do it anyway. And that's a key to philanthropy, I think, because, you know, if you're not getting a tax write-off for it, right? If you're not sure how much of it is going toward administrative fees, because I've heard all the argument, well, I'm not giving because I read that this much went. I'm like, but that's, you're missing the point. So if we can get to that point where we're looking at it solely from the perspective of this is something that's going to help someone and I'm expecting nothing from it, that shifts the dynamic. Yeah,
it does. It does. And I think so much of this, we've got to get self out of the way, and to your point of selflessness, and remove the ego component out of it and look at it from a higher place of consciousness. And I think if we're able to raise and elevate our level of thinking around charitable giving, it does take us to another place. You know, I'm reminded, if I can share another personal story,
please,
the area where I reside, and I won't mention the name of the organization, but there is a similar charity that's in our area whose sole mission, it seems as though, was to run us out of business. And my point was always, we're both doing good in the community. So there's a dark side to this work as well that could be cutthroat, similar to for-profit as well. And so there is a sense where people feel like, these are my donors, these are my givers. And there's a lot of territorialism and ownership around the space of giving. And so I just really sensed that I was going to approach this work from a place of inner peace and just focus on the mission, focus on the mission. And as we begin to focus on the mission, even though we are a smaller organization in terms of staff size, in terms of assets, and even grant making capacity, over the last 5 years, we have seen a tremendous awakening and a tremendous shift of a lot of the individuals that they were seeking to hoard for themselves have now crossed the road, across the bridge, and now they're in our camp, because what we found is that it's not about who's bigger, who has the most prominence, it's who shares their values, who shares their values. And so as we saw it to be a values-driven organization focused on the mission and life transformation from the inside out, we have seen a tremendous uptick and spike in terms of donations and support and just overwhelming love and people putting their arms around us, rooting for us as an organization. But it started from this place of, I'm going to be unselfish. I'm going to focus on the work. I'm going to love the people. And I'm going to trust that the universe is going to open up these opportunities for us. You know,
that's sounds like a actual show that could be made.
I know.
Philanthropy Wars. You can make a whole series out of it.
Philanthropy Wars.
It's kind of an interesting concept. We may have to pitch that one. But I think that the thing that I'm interested in that regard is, you know, when we're talking about those values and the individuals who are in organizations, I think it's essential to kind of tap into the rationality of everybody realizing that there is enough for everybody, right?
Yes.
And not feeling, to, you know, your point, that those are my donors or this is our program or how can you do whatever the circumstance may be.
Yes.
Because I think that we're on a trajectory, not just in this country, but in this world, where we are forgetting that there is an essential requirement that we all come to the same, and this isn't religious for those listening, the same altar to give the type of recognition to our commonality as human beings. Because last time I checked, Michael, I mean, there may be something that I haven't seen. It could be, you know, where, but last time I checked, we're all kind of, you know, the human race. And where we one lose, we all lose eventually, because we can't live indefinitely thinking that what's happened to someone won't particularly happen to me and mine. And that's the seed, I think, that has to be planted with everyone when it comes to the idea of, how can I give? Why should I give? And what do I give? Because it comes from a very interior, individual place. And the reason I'm saying that, I think about your backstory, and I'm going to dig a little bit into your history.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, you talked about Miami and everything here. Given how you came up, the environment you came up.
Yes.
There were some similarities, although where you were in Miami was nowhere like it was where I was in St. Louis. So we had our differences in the sense that it was all bad, but I think that Miami was probably a little bit worse than St. Louis was. But I always tell people, given that, I had three possibilities that were expected for me, and I'm older than you. So as a guy who was born in, you know, 1963, I was going to be on drugs, in jail, or dead, based upon the expectations for me. And moving beyond that doesn't make us special, doesn't make us unique, really. It makes us blessed. Your background, surrounded by the circumstances, the people that you were, you could have gone in those directions as well. And something shifted for you. Talk to me about that. And then tell me how, on this daily basis, Mr. Philanthropy Executive, leader, inspirer. You use that to remind yourself of how in this world we all need to figure out who we are versus who we've been and how to use that to encourage others to do the same.
Yeah. So when you consider my background, and I know you know it well, Charles, people would have said, I don't know how you made it out. Or people have said, I don't know how you made it out. So being in a situation, having two uneducated parents, none of them graduated from high school, having a brother who has battled drug addiction for as long as I can remember, having two sisters who were pregnant at a very early age, had a very abusive father, grew up in an inner city community, welfare, food stamps, you name it, public assistance. I was very fortunate in the sense that I had mentors in my life, people who saw something in me at a time in which I did not see it in myself, who cultivated a sense of belief within me that helped me to see the potential of what my life could become. So when I think about my background, when I think about where I'm at as an executive these years later, the messaging really hasn't changed because I was able to take the way how I made it out. And I know that's a song, how I made it out. And applied it to every evolution of my career. And it's a four-pronged thing that I apply to my life. It's belief, potential, action, and results. And I apply that to every facet of my life. So first thing, I'm dealing with this even with my son. I'm going to share it with you on a personal level. So my youngest son was diagnosed with scoliosis, a curvature of the spine. And he found himself in a very dark place, feeling that life has dealt him a bad hand. And how do I overcome this situation? And I found that he was stuck in that place, feeling that his body was atrophying and that he wasn't developing properly. And every career move, now granted, he's only 18. So every career move now that he's wanted to make, he always would come back to this and say, but my scoliosis, but my scoliosis. So even in my own life, even my work as an executive, I brought had to bring him to a place of increasing his belief level about what's possible. Because once I increased that, Charles, it would allow him to see the potential of what his life can become. So we started talking in the midst of your scoliosis. What can we do now? I know it's not ideal for you right now, but what can we do right now that would bring a sense of hope to your life right now? So you won't feel like you're living every day through the eyes of a disparity. What can we do? And so he says, well, maybe I could start my own business. So we began to do some research and he started his own business called Raving Fans Media. And now he has become a social media expert at 18. So he took all the classes. He got certified in it. He got some clients in the medical niche, working with dentists and doctors. And it's a great part-time income for him, you know. And now he's starting to see the potential of what he could do. And now he's taking action now towards his surgery. So I know that was a slight divergent from what the core of what we're saying, but bring it full circle. In every conversation that I have now as an adult in my work with philanthropy, I'm always the role of the heart in the room, because you said something that I think is very profound that is oftentimes missed. And it's this whole idea that we're all in this together. And when you really look at the root of the word philanthropy, it all comes back down to the love of humanity. And so my role, or a sense of calling, or a sense of purpose around my leadership, is to bring these folks who are in every room back to the heart of what philanthropy is about. Yes, I know you're rich. Yes, I know you're on a public. You're trading your company public. Yes, I know you have a jet. Yes, I know you have a yacht. But it's about the love of the people.
Right.
So I have to always bring people back to that perspective. So yes, to your point, my background has most certainly shaped who I am now. This idea of love leadership, it has really shaped who I am now, Charles. Yes.
I am not surprised, first of all, that is the case. I would not expect anything less. And I am at the same time intrigued as to how, going a little bit back here to the fact that there is a understanding that you can only do what you can do. But given that it is about the people and the things that you witness, do you even still watch the news, for instance?
I don't watch. It's too negative for me. Yeah.
Because sometimes you have to sequester yourself so that you are separate from all of it, but at the same time aware in another way that it's going on around you so that you don't lose sight of the focus you need to have to do what you can, to give what you can give. And that applies whether you're leading an organization or as an individual. Because as I said, if I see something, I'm like, I'll roll my eyes. I can't take that in right now. You know, it's interesting to me that you have got to constantly reevaluate what you're saying, because the world as we see it today, and this isn't just a criticism or a, you know, argument about, you know, social media and media in general, but we unfortunately have found much more interest in all of the unsavory, all of the negative and hurtful. I mean, if I hear another person, you know, in a beef or clapping back at someone or whatever, I'm thinking of all the things there are in the world to do, this is what you're spending your time on. And I think that even you, as inspiring as you are, as positive as you are, it's good to hear that you too have to disassociate yourself from it, because it really can make you detract your interest from what you can do, because you just end up taking in, oh my gosh, look at all of this craziness. How am I ever going to get my arms around it? How do you find yourself? How do you find yourself opportunities where you can recenter on a regular basis as you deal with the things you have to deal with every day?
Yeah. So as a part of my daily practice, every morning and every single evening before I go to bed, there is I listen to something inspirational, something positive, something encouraging to start my day and to end my day. So I'm usually finding something on YouTube or something that I'm subscribing to, listening to a podcast of inspirational, positive material to start my day and to end my day. And then one of the things I learned about maybe 10 years ago that has become a daily practice, I make a list of maybe 4 or 5 things that I'm going to accomplish every single day. I used to have that big things to do list that I never finished, but now I make a purpose to look at maybe 4 or 5 things that I know that I'm going to get done every single day. I think for me, Charles, is that I'm really so focused on what my life's mission is. And so I have a strong sense of who I am and what I want. And so when things come against that, I have very strong boundaries around that. So for me, I'm drama free. I just don't do drama at all. It's just not something of interest to me at all. And I recognize that people need that in their lives or want that in their lives, but not me. So for me, being centered, operating from a place of inner peace and joy and happiness, you know, the Black Daily Lama, whatever you want to call me, that's what I am. That's what I am. I'm Black hippie, y'all. That's what I am. So,
that's giving me all kind of imagery right now.
I know. I mean, but I'm serene inside, brother. I am serene inside. That's the place by which I operate. And so go ahead.
No, I said, go ahead.
Yeah. So that's the place by which I operate. And so things that tend to come around that I have a way of lovingly putting boundaries around that and letting people know that and stating what my boundaries are to protect this inner sanctity that I want to enjoy in my life.
How do you influence those within the organization to the extent that you can? To also not practice exactly the same as you do, of course, but to embrace that idea in terms of how they're approaching their days. And, you know, I don't No, I was going to say, I don't know about you, but I think I do. You know, I have people who report to me and I'm constantly helping them to affirm what it is that mm-hmm. they choose. How do you do that so that that not only becomes something that you do as an individual, but that you're helping others as a result, giving, right, by encouraging them to find that inner balance and that inner peace for themselves within the organization?
Yeah, I do it. I approach it from a very practical standpoint. Usually it's through the interview process when it is determined that they're going to come to work for the organization or be a board member or a donor. I usually ask them up front, what is it that I could be doing as someone who is in your life, as someone mm-hmm. who is co-laboring with you in this work? What can I do to encourage you? And it's different for every person. Mm-hmm. Some say, don't micromanage me. Some say, I need a little bit more accountability. Some say, I love to get an encouraging, a positive word. So if you come across an encouraging podcast or a positive quote, you know, send that my way. I'm very inspired by that sort of thing. Some people say, I need for you to take a more standoffish role. If there an issue comes up, then I will reach out to you and let you know. So I try to meet them where they are. Mm. I try to meet them where they are. I don't know if that's saying a whole lot, but that's the way I approach it, in the sense that it's usually driven by the way they want to be responded to.
Right. No, I think it does say a lot because, you know, we live in a world where people listen to respond as opposed to receiving a message. So even opening the door where you are saying what works for you.
Yes.
Becomes huge in terms of impact, because, you know, when you hear about organizations and you hear about company cultures, it's always interesting to me that, and I've been at this a long time, you know, I always am interested. You know, I get contacted sometimes by recruiters or whatever. And, you know, the other day someone contacted me about this role in healthcare in a place I would never go, but that's another story. Mm-hmm. But I said, hey, I know someone who could be great for this, but, you know, they haven't worked in the field, but they know this discipline back and forth. They literally can, you know, do anything with anything. Well, no, they'd prefer someone who worked in this area. I'm like, well, you're completely eliminating a whole pool of people who could be great simply because they haven't done one thing. And the reason that they were contacting me is because I work in healthcare. I work in it now, and I worked in it in the job before. Before that, I'd never worked in healthcare. So it's like, here's your prima facie example of what can happen when you do this. And I think, Michael, that when we are open to letting ourselves see what people can be, letting ourselves see who people truly are, making them feel comfortable enough not to fear being those things, that's when we hit pay dirt. And that you're willing to do that from the outset, being authentic and open and honest, it invites people to say, this is a place where, you know, the thing that Oprah always says, ultimately, everybody wants to know that they've been seen, that they've been heard, and that they matter.
Yes.
And that is the way I think you really get to inner peace, is by knowing that you're not just walking on this planet by yourself, but that other people have you, people see you, and people appreciate you. Maybe not that you necessarily can count off on your hand, but given the opportunity, they can do so. And that you can do that within the organization, I think only helps propel forth the willingness they have to put their all into the mission of the organization, to put their all into supporting anyone and everyone that they can through the means and resources available. And that's a leadership trait that you can't shake a stick at. So congrats on that. I give you some.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
Kudos.
Thank you. Yeah. I do think it requires a degree of empathy.
Yeah.
To do this level of work. And what mm-hmm. I say to people all the time, it's not something unique to me. I think I heard Michael Beckwith say it. I am that which I am, and I'm willing to allow all others to be that which they are.
Mm.
And so
that's awesome.
So, and I think that resonates with a lot of people when you say that. Mm-hmm. And I say, at the end of the day, you know, we do have to accomplish the mission. This is the mission. This is the vision where we're going. But as we have our conversations, help me to see things that I may not see from your perspective that points back to the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that very well. Mm-hmm. So I think it works.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about trying to create other carbon copies of myself. it's allowing people to show up in their own authentic way. Yeah.
And I think, you know, we've done a lot here in this conversation. We've talked about what giving is, what giving is not, and we've also defined what it can be. With that being considered and spoken to, my next question is this. Taking into account what we've discussed here, what power lies in giving and how is it best represented based upon individual wants and needs?
Say that one more time. It's such a good question. I had to digest that.
So if you're looking at all of those things, well, from your lips to God's ear. But, you know, when we look at all that it is not, all that it is and all that it can be, what are we looking at in terms of what the power of giving is as it relates to every individual based upon their wants and needs? Because we do know what it is not is just cash. What we do know what it is based upon our own values and experiences and our interest in humanity. And what we know it can be is doing things that are different than expectations may, you know, set. So here I am walking in the door, good old John, you know, C, I'll call myself, and I'm saying, I want to do something to give back, but I'm not looking to get anything from it. I'm not looking to take anything from it. I'm not looking for it to make me famous or have my name on a door, but I still want to know that there is a power in doing something for the greater world as a result of making a choice to give. What is that power and how do individuals define what that may be, that power for themselves?
Yeah, I know with the people that I deal with, it's usually that sense of personal fulfillment, knowing that I am doing my part to make the world better than the way I found it. So I hear that line a lot that's being spoken by a lot of philanthropists and humanitarians that I work with. Also, it reminds me of when you ask a teacher, what is the ultimate compliment for him or her? They will tell you it's the fulfillment surrounding having a former student come back and say, you made a difference in my life. I think it's the same in our line of work for that philanthropist or that humanitarian to say, I played a role in making this happen. So a practical example of that would be, we had a young lady in our community who struggled to have the financial wherewithal to go to college. Very bright. And that's an atypical story of so many situations. Mm-hmm. But that was about 4 years ago. And we remember that early on, and a bunch of donors came in and they decided to take her on and invest in her and make a difference in her life. And we just did a Zoom meeting with her graduating.
Aww.
And we invited all of the donors who made a contribution towards that. And to hear her tell her story and tear up and just the ups and downs of her journey and trying to stay in school and almost dropping out of school, but she stuck with it. And then she leaned in on the Zoom call and said, it's because of you. I think that was just a powerful moment for everyone. So I still think it's that sense of that personal gratification and fulfillment to know that a life has changed as a result of my contribution. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a big proponent of self-awareness. And, you know, some months ago, I love inspiration because when it comes to you, can't do anything but give in to it. And in this particular instance, I was just inspired by something that occurred to me. And, you know, to some people, it may seem a little maudlin because of the way it begins. But I always tell people that if you go to a cemetery and you look at the headstones that are there, there is a date of birth, there is a date of death, and then in between, there's this little bitty dash, right? Mm. Most people focus on the beginning and the end, but your legacy, your impact lies in that dash. Yes. Because that is representative, even though it's smaller than anything else that's on that stone. It is representative of what your life on this planet meant. And dovetailing into what you're saying, the ability to take understanding, compassion, value for other humans, and to incorporate it into something that compels you to give, to share, to support is legacy creating. And I think that is the reason that I want to impress upon people. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. Impress upon people that that's your legacy. I always pray that every day that I put more good into the world than I take from it. That's because I believe I have a purpose. And if that becomes the legacy, because I don't know if there's anything else that I can say that I've done that has been as legacy driven, but it will be what is represented for me in that dash whenever my time comes. Do you agree with that? And if so, tell me how, in your perspective, this is the reason I said some people may think it's maudlin, how the work that you're doing and the work that we're today encouraging others to do here speaks to the power of giving and the legacy it creates.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I agree wholeheartedly with that, that definition and the analogy about the dash in the middle. I think it's very profound. It's a central part of our work through the Global Center of Generosity, where we have so many individual philanthropists who are giving on a day-to-day basis of their time, their talent, and their treasure. And now they're looking at, upon my demise, upon my transition, what will my legacy be even after I'm gone from this earth? And so now you're getting into a whole nother catastrophic level of giving where you're setting up a legacy fund that will live in perpetuity, not so much to keep your name alive, but all these causes and projects that you cared about during your lifetime, you want to see the continuation of that funding flowing to these organizations. That's very profound. And we see that a lot. So the fastest growing of our segment of our organization is legacy giving and legacy fund creation. About a year ago, we had a woman who came into our organization, again, a transplant from Kentucky, moved here. And she is a single woman, never been married, have no children, but she was able to do well. She was able to do well. And she, everyone knows her. She is very active in a lot of the animal shelters. And she does a lot with animals. And she just walked in and said, "Hey, Michael, I need to have a conversation with you because I recognize by my own admission, I'm nearing the end of life. And I want this to continue. So I want to take a piece of my estate. Because I have no one to heir it to, no one to heir it to, and I'm going to make a legacy. And I want $500,000 of my estate to be divided up amongst three organizations that I care about when I'm gone." That's legacy.
Yes,
that's
it
legacy.
Is.
Yeah, it's legacy, and it's very profound and powerful. Now, I didn't tell the organizations because I don't want them calling me saying, "Is she still here?" As awful as that sounds.
I get you. Oh, my gosh.
I thought you needed a laugh on your podcast. So.
Oh, my. It's like, just checking in.
Just checking in.
Wow.
Did she mention our name? So.
Oh, my God. Wow. I wasn't expecting that one, that's for sure. Yeah. But it does speak exactly to that. And I think that's important. And you ain't said nothing but a word right there with that one, because I think that's going to be something that's resonant with a lot of people, because I don't, you know, we don't like to think about these things. I've always had to, you know, my family history as well now.
Sure.
So it's like, I can't just assume nothing's going to happen. I've been prepared since I was probably like 18. It's like going out of here. But I do think that that's a huge statement in terms of the idea of purpose, meaning, and legacy. I think it also has application, though, in terms of, you know, that's something tangible, dollars and cents. But I think it also, based upon our earlier conversation, speaks to what we do in terms of the legacy we live and lead, in terms of the memories we leave with people, the experiences that they connect with us as a result of our being here, the values, to your point much earlier, that we represent, and their willingness to carry that on in recognition of the fact that we were here. And so the power, I would like to say, as we get ready to wrap up, of giving is tied to all these things, but it begins with a sense of purpose, I think.
Yes, and it does.
Getting to that point of purpose you arrive there after a lot of different experiences, a lot of ups, a lot of downs and in-betweens. But once you get there, you realize that there is so much more than the pursuit of self-gratification. I think it's more of a spiritual gratification that is resonant of the power that we get. Because, you know, and I'm not telling you anything that you don't know, you must have felt it thousands of times. When you do something unexpected or expected, and it benefits someone, and even if you never hear from these people or don't know who the guy, and you just can say, today I know that there is a difference made. There is nothing like it. There's just nothing like it. And I think that that's part of the power is you know that there is a difference made despite regulations that say it can't be made or people who say that you can't solve the problem. You know that in that moment, in that time, you did it. Is that something that you would say? Because I don't want to put words in your mouth, nor do I think I could. But
we think a lot alike, though.
We do. But is that something that you would say if we were going to categorize that power of giving that is an output that is worth the input?
Yes, I would most certainly say that it is most certainly worth just that. You know, what we see a lot, particularly with families who are older and they're more mature, they're more settled. They've had all the toys. They've had the big house. They've had all of that. And they are really thinking legacy at this point. And so what we hear a lot, Charles, is a husband, a wife, or even if they're single, they come to us and they say, I have not given enough thought around legacy, even particularly the legacy I want to leave with my children. I have this money that I've amassed and I've accumulated, but the same financial blessing that I have, I don't want it to mess up my kids. So how can I transfer not only the value of my estate, but my personal values onto my children? So they can manage and handle this and be more philanthropic than I was. Because I'm a late bloomer when it comes to this. And what if I had learned this sooner or earlier? So when they come to this place of enlightenment, that's the word I'm going to use, this place of enlightenment, because it's connected to spirituality. Now they want to share it. Now they want to share it. And that's very rewarding and gratifying when you could be a part of that. That's very, and that's what it comes down to.
Well, I think we have had a lot of great conversation here.
And yes, we have.
How wonderful to end with the use of the word enlightenment, because that's certainly what I am as a result. I knew this was going to go like this, by the way. I mean, this is point and, you know, pure example. You know, it doesn't matter when you've last spoken to anyone with whom you have a connection, because you will literally pick right back up where you last left off. And this has been the case today. So, for people who are interested in supporting your organization and foundation. And just learning more about it, go ahead and provide some details as to how they can do that.
Sure. We're the Global Center of Generosity, which is a division of the Cape Coral Community Foundation. And our website is capecoralcf.org. Again, that's capecoralcf.org. And again, since so much of our conversation has been around the non-monetary, you know, we're all about connecting purpose to passion. So whatever it might be, in any way that we could be of help to create a movement of generosity, that's what we're here for.
But don't forget to send the coins, by the way, people. Michael will not say that, but I will say that on his behalf, as well as the organizations.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. And Michael, this has been an elucidating and enjoyable and totally uplifting kind of conversation.
Thank you. I see your light, Charles. I see your light.
Well, you know what? It's the bulb is still here. That's what I'm keeping in mind. I certainly see yours. And I encourage you, as we always have, to keep doing what you're doing, because whatever you've done, you've always done it at the highest and most profound level. And that is the case here. So thank you for joining us.
And thank you, Charles.
Just keep doing the thing, my brother.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure. Take care.